call 1-800-205-6245. Now, I know that many of the audience and the listeners heard Jerry Sullivan yesterday. He talked about the biosphere reserves in the United States, and he talked about, among other things, the United Nations World Heritage Sites in the United States, but we didn't get into details. We ran out of time. He was so knowledgeable, he had so much information. But do you folks realize that the United Nations, or the World Heritage Sites in the United States, basically turning our national parks and some of our national treasures over to the United Nations, include the Everglades National Park in Florida, the Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, Tennessee and North Carolina, Independence Hall, Philadelphia, Monticello, and the University of Virginia, the Statue of Liberty, Yellowstone National Park. Wake up, folks. We cannot allow this to happen. Yet it's happening right before our very eyes, and the reason it's happening because of public apathy. Now, if there's one thing that you can do, and I'm asked this question over and over and over again, how can I help? I'm just a housewife. I have four children I have to take care of. Okay, you can get on the phone, and you can make phone calls, and you can send faxes, and you can send wires, and you can write letters. Now, you should take apart a portion of each day and do this to the various congressmen, senators, and bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. Okay, that's one problem. The second problem I need to raise, and we covered the biosphere program pretty well over the last week or so, every hour on the hour, and I think we may have been successful in having the comment period extended. I don't know. As soon as somebody finds out, would you let me know? And now, here's another problem. I received a letter from a man from Boston, Massachusetts. It actually faxed it to me. And he said, "Dear Ted, there are rumors that the House of Representatives may not investigate activities at MENA, Arkansas. The committee that is actively considering the matter is the General Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee of the House Banking Committee, chaired by Congressman Spencer Bachus, B-A-C-H-U-S of Alabama. Banking Committee, and that's the U.S. Senate, is Alabama, and the chairman of the H-I-A-C-H of Iowa. Are we going to allow them not to investigate MENA? There have been 9 investigations of the drug operation out of MENA, Arkansas, by various government agencies, and law enforcement bodies have been stopped before reaching any conclusion or taking any action. And as a result, for the last 15 years, we've had drugs coming in through MENA, Arkansas, right in Bill Clinton's home ground territory. Even while he was governor, Clinton was aware of it. Larry Nichols has made the statement that he had informed Bill Clinton when he was governor that the drugs were coming in there. And these drugs are used to destroy the moral fibers of our country and to destroy this country within itself. And what in the meantime have we had? Not one confiscation of an airplane, not one confiscation of an automobile, not one arrest, not one conviction, but we have had a number of homicides and mysterious deaths, including suicides and numerous airplane crashes. Okay, you've got to write and call to your congressmen and senators, and in particular, you've got to write and call Congressman Spencer, S-P-E-N-C-E-R, Bachus, B-A-C-H-U-S of Alabama. And he is, I'll give you his address, the Honorable Spencer Bachus, B-A-C-H-U-S, Chairman, Subcommittee on General Oversight and Investigations, 442 Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N, House Office Building, 442 Cannon House Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. And here's the phone number for you, folks, 202-225-7502, 202-225-7502. Call, get the names and addresses of every senator and congressman involved, of course, in the General Oversight Investigations Subcommittee.
House Banking Committee. Get their names and write to them, send them faxes, make phone calls.
Okay, we're counting on you to do this. We had a tremendous response over the last week or so in connection with the Biosphere program. Okay, my guest today is Chip, and Chip, it looks like we're coming up to about a minute before we have to take a break, but welcome to the Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report again in the second, seventh of a second series.
of shows. Chip, while we have a few minutes, I want people to know how they get a hold of you, and why don't you go ahead and give your name, address, phone numbers, and so forth.
Sure. If you'd like a copy of the Tatum Chronicles and you're outside of the country, it's 417-625-0303, 417-625-0303. Our toll-free number inside the U.S. is 1-800-201-7892, 800-201-7892, and that one's extension 58. Email address is chiptatum@aol.com.
And, Chip, you offer in the way of documentation your Tatum Chronicles, right, which has your flight plans listed and notations right on the back thereof, right?
Tatum Chronicles have show explicitly that the government did have knowledge and did have complicity in the movement and trafficking of drugs to the United States.
Okay, time for a quick break, folks. Be right back. Wake up, America. Wake up.
Another station, which had taped Radio Austria and some other music and thrown it on the air, jamming that. Probably it was a United States location that it was transmitted from, rather than the Austrian location where they normally transmit and would bounce over, and it simply overpowered the signal that was here. And so that you all understand is there is a network set up whereby FEMA can pull up emergency broadcasters and emergency broadcast stations and broadcast anything on any station. That's a control that they do have.
Where is that set up, you know?
Across the U.S.
And would that have been just in the Eastern Coast, or would it have been
in every metropolitan area of the United States? FEMA broadcast has taken over. Remember the emergency broadcast network?
Right.
FEMA now controls a derivative of that, which they can take over the control of radio stations and transmit what they want.
What happened on that show? Tell us about the OSG operation that you were talking about. By the way, did this just take place on the East Coast, or did it take place across the country, or do you know?
It just took place. The only thing information I had was on the East Coast that this happened, up in the Northeast, not anywhere else.
Okay, you want to talk about the OSG operations?
Sure. I was talking at the time, I believe, about the operational subgroups and about us working, the OSGs being a portion of the terrorist incident working group. While at one of the meetings, I received what's called a purpose and scope paper. And this purpose and scope paper actually outlines the formation of a corporation whose purpose is, and I'm going to read right off of the paper, to provide a central network of information, analysts and strategists on an international basis in pursuit of world order and economic stability. The scope of the corporation involves four features: centralization of informational services, analysis of data by region-specific analysts, provide recommendations based upon analysts' reports by international experts, provide international master plan for world growth and economic stability. The corporation is to be privately owned with board of directors consisting of 12 members elected annually by the shareholders. In addition, there are to be five departments: data resources, political management, economic management, military management, and environmental management.
Now, what group is this? You say at a meeting, was that the meeting within 2 weeks after the Bilderbergers met?
That's correct, and this was supplied by then President George Bush to the members of the meeting of the OSG, so that we understood more what our calling was, who we were working for.
Well, your calling was to take over the country and take over the world, right?
The world, right? That's correct.
Right. And was this the particular show where you were jammed? Then we were talking about within 2 weeks after the Bilderbergers met, you got the intelligence operations meet the OSG group from all over the country.
OSG intelligence officers internationally would meet at a specific area. That's correct.
And you talked about people from the intelligence officers from Turkey and England, and I think from Argentina.
Danish. And British.
And British. And you also talked about you were given instructions that you should not report back to your country or to your leaders in your country, that this was something that should be kept within the group. And one of your Argentinian intelligence officers apparently did, and he was in the meeting for 1 hour and he disappeared, right?
He was gone. That's correct. Now, the another thing we need to understand is if we were current intelligence officers, say if I was a current employee of the Central Intelligence Agency and I was tasked across to an OSG, I would no longer be required to report to the CIA. I would be required to report to my commander in the OSG.
And who was your commander?
That varied from time to time. North was at one point. Secord was at another point.
And Bush?
Bush was a director, but not the command, not a commander, not an OSG commander. OSG is the operational subgroups. That's the intelligence and the operative actual operative units. In command of that, there's actually a chain of command that walks right up. Ultimately, for U.S. intelligence officers, a final decision was made. And that final decision, if made, would be the final decision, and the only man who could make that for the United States officers was George Bush.
And did he make the decision for the foreign intelligence officers also?
No. Those foreign intelligence officers had their own commander that would make those decisions.
But there must have been some sort of cooperation between Bush and the intelligence commanders, weren't there?
Sure there was.
Yeah, so they probably had their own meetings then, didn't they?
And I will say that the OSG commanders themselves were all U.S. intelligence men.
Okay, be right back, folks. Wake up, America, wake up.
And now, here's Ted.
And we are back, and my guest today is Chip Tatum, 25-year CIA deep cover agent. And the studio has just informed me that I made a mistake. Instead of sending seven tapes, we have eight tapes. Yes, not seven, but eight tapes for $49.95. And it's a whopping a big deal because you have 15 hours of interviews with Chip Tatum. And I think this is fantastic. So, folks, order your tapes today. $49.95, eight tapes, 15 hours, plus the previous tapes. Let's see, how much would that be? We had the six tape. We had 5.5 hours. We had 5, 10, we had 11 hours before. Folks, you're getting, for between the two, $49.95 for the first series and $49.95 for the second series, you're getting 26 hours of interviews with Chip Tatum. You've got to get these tapes, make copies, get them out. Again, you folks that say, what can I do, what can I do? Order these tapes, make copies for yourself, go out and buy yourself a tape recorder, and send five to five of your friends, have them send five, and have them send five. 26 hours for two series, $49.95 each, and the transcript will be $29.95 for the second and for the first. Okay, correction on that, folks. Get your order in now, 800-205-6245. Chip, you talked about operation subgroups, and you talked about the goals, and, you know, like you talked about the military and whatever. Was that broken down in subgroups? Well, say, for example, would they give you an assignment? You're in charge of the military in this particular area, or what?
You're speaking in terms of the working
meeting
for the OSG?
Yeah, the OSG. Uh-huh. In other words, when you had this meeting, then they'd have you out there, and you read from your report there what they had you, what they told you they wanted you folks to do. I mean, you know, you got to do this with the military and that, and so on and so forth.
They would provide to us all the equipment, all the identification, whatever we need. If on several occasions I was placed in as an agent in the Defense Intelligence Agency, we had received some information that one of our operatives was out of line, and so in order for me to investigate that, I had to go forward as a DIA officer, and they would provide cover for that. Those documents were real. And they came from the United States government. Normally, however, if there was a neutralization involved, I know always on my side, but not on other officers. It wasn't other officers' operational standards. I would require on neutralizations a executive order. I call them executive orders. They're not exactly executive orders. The word executive by order of the vice president or president, however, was in there, and it was on White House letterhead.
And this would be very cleverly worded, so you couldn't figure out exactly what your assignment was, right?
Yeah, there's back doors for them on it, sure. You know, we're told that we're given clearance simply because it's an intelligence operation, we're to use any means necessary to recover documents or to recover stolen items from the United States, and in the interest of national security, this person is to be apprehended, and we may use any means necessary to apprehend the person and the documents.
Don't you think that terminology, in the interest of national security, is overused?
Absolutely. Not overused, misused.
Oh, misused. You're right. It's more misused than overused, but it's probably both. But I even see it on the TV now. In the interest of national security, you can't do this, you can't do that, and keep your mouth shut. I saw a movie the other night. I don't watch those movies because they make me sick, but I happened to be flipping the dial, and I noticed the actor said, in the interest of national security. Anyway, anything more you want to mention about the OSG operation subgroups?
I don't think so. I know they're there. They're very, very busy these days to make that 2001 timetable that was put on us in 1992, and they have a lot of work to do.
And what percent do you feel they've completed so far of the 100% of the projects?
Well, I think they're probably about 80% there. You know, the biggest obstacle that they said that we were told that we would have, and I even wrote some stuff to my wife out of prison explaining this to her, was China. And, you know, two years ago, I wrote her that. That China was going to be a big obstacle and something that they would have to deal with, and that what I see today is they're certainly dealing with it. I heard a congressman on TV talking about China and how it's not a big deal, you know, nothing's ever really going to happen if you let China have a little port. Well, what isn't being said is that this isn't the private corporation of China. The government of China are
right.
The people
okay.
Reaping monies out of this. And
be
they
right
just
back,
build.
Folks. Wake up, America.
They build their arms.
And we are back, and my guest today is Gene Chip Tatum. But before we go back to Chip, we have Linda from Denver, who is attending the Oklahoma City trial in Denver. Go ahead, Linda.
Hello. Today they finished up bringing on character witnesses for Timothy McVeigh. And yesterday they had James Tate, who was the journalist of Soldier of Fortune magazine, which has not, by the way, been considered anti-government. He did some very unbiased and impartial reporting on different patriot causes. For instance, he reported the Randy Weaver incident. He reported the Gordon Call incident. He extensively reported on Waco and also the incident of Donald Scott, whose property was seized because it bordered on a park and the government wanted it. He did a very good job in giving the patriots their day in court, so to speak, because he was very accurate in portraying the issues that have been aggrieved by the American people. And in the United States attempt to discredit him by saying, well, you know, who are you? You have no journalistic degree. You're just, you know, a constitutionalist crazy writer. And he was very effective in rebutting that. He has won the Macon Award, which is a journalistic award for accuracy and professional reporting. Then Mr. Ryan, who was the U.S. attorney, attempted to ridicule his reports by saying, how can you have everything from these secret sources that aren't disclosed? I mean, these phantom sources. And then Mr. Tate effectively rebutted that by pointing out that Deep Throat is the name of the secret source that Woodward and Bernstein used to open up the Watergate investigations, and nobody considered that questionable. Then the entire room and the press was subjected to Day 51, the tape about the Waco incident. And they played the entire tape from start to finish. And I've never seen that tape, and I was really impressed that it is quite professional. It's not like a home movie. And it was very well put together and explained how ATF stormed that building. And they had video footage of Army tanks crushing the smaller outhouses. And they also pointed out that even after the building had been burned down, there were women and children trying to escape from the kitchen. And as they opened the door to run out of the burning building, they were shot. So they had to retreat back into the building and take their choice of being murdered by gunfire or murdered by fire. The The press was definitely silent, and the whole room was in shock watching this, but I heard comments later in the press room that they were disgusted that they had to be subjected to those kind of videotapes. I'm still on the pulse that there's nothing that can get into the hearts of these reporters to be fair and impartial. Then today they continued with a videotape of McVeigh's childhood. And what was the United States was happily pointing out is that McVeigh had advantages of a beautiful, warm home, loving parents with grandparents that oversee when the parents are too busy. He had beautiful holidays. And I thought to myself how conspicuous that here we have a loving, beautiful, strong American family whose children grow up to be educated and productive and honorable people, so much that this is an army-decorated gentleman. Is that, could that be the reason why they need to destroy the American family? They don't want American, strong American families producing constitutionally aware human beings in this country.
That's definitely one of the goals of the New World Order.
Well, it's coincidental to me that he did not come from a broken home. He came from a beautiful home. And that's why he is so aware of the Constitution and the way America should be as opposed to the way it's turning. So then today they finished up with Mrs. McVeigh, formerly Mrs. McVeigh. She is now, I forget her new name, but McVeigh's mother got on the stand, and that is the only time McVeigh had to wipe away a tear because she read a statement to the jury about... It was a very interesting statement. She said, "I cannot believe my son caused this devastation. There are too many loose ends and unanswered questions." And she said, "Yes, I am pleading for my son's life. He's a human being, and I beg you to make the right decision and be motivated by your loyalty to God." So that's how we ended up today, and the judge recessed until tomorrow morning, and at 8:30 we will reconvene to hear the closing arguments prior to instructing the jury to make their decision about life in prison or... death by injection.
It's inconceivable to me that the federal government wants him to live, Linda. What do you think?
I'm totally torn. I have no idea what the jury's going to do at this point because I must confess that these last 2 days of testimony have been incredible. His home videos, his being decorated as a soldier, the truth that was disclosed through these Waco reports. They were very well documented, and they were explained by very credible reporters who are mainstream, who've earned awards. So it would be very callous of the jury to give him a death sentence at this point because they have proven the state of mind, and they have proven that there were 17 children killed in Waco, slaughtered, and it is very little question about whether that was a mistake. I mean, the FBI has admitted that they could have done a better job. And so are those children's lives worth less than the federal children in Oklahoma City? And I believe this is how they're closing the question. You know, life is life. We don't decide what its value is depending on their parents' political beliefs.
And the mainstream control media found that those videos as offensive to them because they should be subjected to it?
Yes, they were horrified. They said, "I don't know why we have to watch this." So
that's
just
scary.
Can't believe it.
That's scary, Linda.
Right. It makes me all the more determined to pursue the honest reporting that has to give the other side of the story.
Well, thank you for your reports. You've been very, very good, outstanding, as a matter of fact, in reporting to us on a daily basis. And I think this is very important, particularly for our listeners.
Yeah, but I think America is going to be waking up. I think that at least out of that entire room, a couple of reporters did express dismay and shock because they'd never seen the other side of the story.
Did they bring out the fact that the FBI sharpshooter murdered Randy Weaver's wife while she was holding the baby?
That was brought out because each article in Soldier of Fortune was discussed by James Pate, who was the writer, and he did point out that the little boy was shot in the back and... Yeah, you know, there are some documented facts that just cannot be swept under the rug.
And what are the reporters? What was the reporters' reaction to that?
They said nothing. It didn't show up in the papers today at all.
How about the reporting there locally, Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post? Are they being objective or the usual hogwash?
Today, the Rocky Mountain News did a summary of the reports in the Soldier of Fortune, which they presented as what has influenced McVeigh's political opinion. And they did. If someone can read between the lines, the information is there for you to run with.
So, in other words, of the two papers, the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post, the Rocky Mountain News has been more objective and fair. Is that what you're saying?
No, I wouldn't say that. As a matter of fact, I was speaking to the Denver Post reporter yesterday, and he pointed out that the Denver Post is struggling with circulation numbers dropping over the anti-gay rights amendment. They were in favor of protecting gay rights, and a lot of readers wrote in and blasted them and said, you know, we're Christians and we don't follow that line. So they lost a lot of readership. So what now, this reporter told me, is that Denver Post is trying to get extremely impartial, not take a position. And their reports, Denver Post reports, have been very informative.
Now if we can just do something with the three major networks on television.
Exactly.
Great report, Linda.
All right.
Wake up, America.